text to say alaykum in plural.
That's another point. Why it is used as kum for a singular person,
right,
a plural pronoun, it's because to show the respect,
right,
to the next person. Because if we say assalamu alayka or ki, it shows disrespect or
right,
equal, like he's equal in rank, not prior. So that shows also the respect. So there are many facts that in the Quran we have many verses where masculine verb or masculine noun has come in order to talk about the paradise, the blessings or the
right,
things that we will get. But there Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is talking to man and woman all together, not
right,
just the men.
Both of them.
Even if the masculine word has been used, it means that the man and woman.
Right.
If Allah wanted to use the two different genders, like it is specific for women and women, we do see in the Quran that Allah mentions Muslimun wal Muslimati.
Right.
The Muslim man and Muslim women. Or Mu'mineen wal Mu'minat. The believing men and believing women. So he brings both of them then.
Right.
He mentions both names.
And there's a point behind that, of course.
There's a point behind that. But generally, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is talking about the paradise, it is in this way. That's the first thing.
Right.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir. Insha'Allah, insha'Allah,
insha'Allah, you'll find your way. Second, is there a gender in the paradise or not? Does soul has a gender or not? That's another question.
Right.
When we refer to the Muslim philosophers and in some of the narrations, we see that the soul does not have a gender. It's the human body that has a gender.
Right.
Soul does not mean, like, gender does not mean for a soul. Soul is mujarrat, you know, it's a kind of thing that does not possess these kind of attributes.
Right.
According to some of the scholars, the Islamic philosophers and the narrations. And that's why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Quran he uses a male or the masculine verb or a noun. He talks to both of them. It's because he's talking to the soul, actual soul. And the soul does not have any gender. It's the
right,
it's this body that is being divided into male or female. And that is because, you know, Allah has given us different tasks to do. For example, a soul whose task is to train people, train, you know, the kids, to brought them up,
right,
to give them love. So this soul will have a female body.
Naturally.
On the other hand, the soul which has the responsibility of socializing amongst the people, to go and socialize, to talk to people, to work hard, Allah has given a male body to it. And that's why women cannot become a leader, because her duty is not to socialize or become a social person, to interact with the male and female outside the house.
Right.
You know, there are different reasons. So we need to understand all these things.
Different responsibilities.
Yes,
missions.
Different. On the other hand, in the Quran, when, you know, the question was about the huri, when the word huri has been used, it is not said huri woman.
Right.
The huri or huriya has come on its own. Hurul ayn. Actually, the word is
the
hurul ayn.
Yeah.
Yes. Hurul ayn means the one who has a beautiful eyes. A simple translation. I don't want
right,
to get into the...
The most simple one there.
Yeah,
yeah.
The literal translation
right,
that the eye which has... which black part is, you know, very
right,
clear.
Because
right,
we do have those definitions
is, yes,
in the Arabic.
So I don't want to get into that.
Right.
Rather, it's better to, like, say, having a beautiful eyes. On the other hand, there are other verses of the Quran in which Allah has said, like, in the paradise, whoever wishes, he will get the same thing, like, whatever he wish.
Right.
So in that, even Allah did not say, like, it's for the man or woman.
Right.
So it's common. Huri or Hur al-Ain is a servant, is a paradise servant, which will be given to the male and female both.
Right.
It's not only about the male. Both of them will get that, and it is said in the narrations that the Hur al-Ain will have, I think, like 40 servants, other servants who will be under the command of Hur al-Ain, who will serve this person who will go to the paradise. So for Hur al-Ain, it's not the word woman, and it can be given to the male and female, because in the verses, when you look at the Hur al-Ain, the verses about the Hur al-Ain,
right,
or the, you know, the du'as that we have, supplications, it is in the supplications when we say, oh Allah, give me a Hur al-Ain in the paradise.
Exactly.
The women also recite the same supplication.
No, they skip that part, Sayyid.
But they read the same supplication, the whole of it, and they also ask for the Hur al-Ain. So
right.
Basically, Hur al-Ain is not a woman. We should not think materially about the hereafter, because there we do not have this material world.
Right.
This material thing that we have here, the genders, the, you know, the lust that we have here, it's not over there. That's another world. That's beyond this. That's beyond this material thoughts that we have.
And we cannot grasp it fully by being here. Dear Sayyid, I thank you for answering this question in such a informative way. Also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. Yet again, this had been your host, Musa Al-Bahadili, and you had been listening to the program Q&A on Islamic Beliefs. Thank you for tuning in.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The night in March 2021 that 33-year-old Sarah Everard was arrested, raped and murdered by police officer Wayne Curzons. He has been handed a life sentence, but since the murder, public trust in the force has plummeted. In 4 years, 2,000 officers have been accused of sexual misconduct, including rape. Nearly two-thirds of them have faced no further action. And a quarter of misconduct hearings are closed to the public. Britain's most senior police officer has promised a thorough investigation into the Met's culture, and the Independent Force for Police Conduct says it is dealing with a slew of new referrals since it changed the criteria for abuse of power for sexual purposes.
But is it about referral criteria or something more ingrained and sinister? Curzons was nicknamed the rapist by his colleagues. So why wasn't he weeded out earlier by the Met?
Climate change is sort of steroids for the weather. That's what experts say. From the northernmost to the southernmost points of the Earth, nowhere, and no one is immune to this crisis. In India, people have been devastated by frequent heat waves.
We are affected a lot by this unbearable heat, and us poor are hit the hardest.
And so are Canadians.
It's just unbearable. It's impossible to be out.
This year, July was declared the world's hottest month ever recorded. A recent study shows if the world's emission of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases continues at the same level, in 30 years' time, there will be a climate change apocalypse. That means outdoor life in parts of the Middle East and North Africa would be impossible, regions that are already facing long periods of extreme heat.
We are very tired and cannot stand in the sun. Our situation is very bad. We are exhausted.
Researchers are now warning that even animals and plants are in danger. In a bid to survive, some countries are already looking for new ways to adapt to these intense situations. In Bangladesh, one of the countries worst affected by the extreme weather in recent decades, farmers are developing floating seed beds and salt-resistant rice to avoid unpredictable conditions.
This is the digital age. We saw on YouTube how greenhouse farming works. We tried it on a smaller scale, though. I am doing greenhouse farming this year on 8,000 square feet of land.
Estimates show that $5 trillion a year are needed by 2030 to find measures to fight global warming. But despite signs of progress in a few sectors, the majority of the tasks required for curbing the rising temperatures still seem to be far-fetched. And many are now saying that the upcoming United Nations conference, COP26, is the last major chance to galvanize a collective effort to fight climate change.
Unless there are immediate, rapid, and large-scale reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, we will be unable to limit global heating to 1.5 degrees Celsius, and the consequences will be catastrophic. COP26 this November must mark that turning point. By then, we need all countries to commit to achieve net zero emissions by the middle of this century and to present clear, credible, long-term strategies to get there.
All these are reminders that the fatal consequences of this human-induced crisis are threatening our planet now more than ever before.
Afghanistan has welcomed the recent remarks by leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, who called for greater unity between Sunnis and Shias. This according to a tweet by a spokesman of the political office of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, Muhammad Naeem Wardak. He further said the Taliban are aware of the nation's enemies' scheme and work for tightening brotherhood among Afghan people.
The U.S. has always been trying to deepen the schism between Muslim sects both after the invasion and after the withdrawal. They don't stop their conspiracy, but the Islamic Emirate is aware of it and will never let the enemies of Islam reach their goals. However, they target Shias, but in fact, they are against all of us.
Afghan people have also welcomed Iran's leaders' remarks. In a conference titled Islamic Unity Week and the Responsibility of People in the Afghan capital on Tuesday, the participants said Islamic unity should be part of culture in Muslim world.
Prominent Islamic scholar and the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khomeini, in a very critical point of time came and named this week as Islamic Unity Week, so that all Muslims keep their unity and brotherhood. We all have the same God, Prophet, and Qibla. Then let's benefit from these mutual values for our unity and make it a culture.
Addressing the 35th International Islamic Unity Conference in the Iranian capital, Iran's leader touched on the U.S. campaign to stoke sedition among Islamic countries with the help of its proxies. He said the recent unfortunate and distressing explosions at mosques targeting Muslim worshippers in Afghanistan are among such incidents that were carried out by Daesh. Earlier this month, Daesh terrorist group conducted two deadly attacks against Shia community in Afghanistan. Following the attacks, Muslim leaders noted that such incidents are meant to divide Muslims in the war-torn country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
France's latest unemployment data showed a small improvement, but unemployment remains nearly 8%, at least officially. 5.9 million people remain unemployed, which is just a fraction less than the all-time high of 6.3 million in 2017. Back in September 2008, the total jobless numbered just 4.5 million. That means French unemployment has risen over 30% since the start of the Great Recession. With re-election just 6 months away, many say that Macron is running out of time to devote resources to the jobless or to devise a new system of accounting. Macron campaigned on a promise to bring unemployment under 7%.
His effort, or his promise to increase employment by changing labor laws that would make France more attractive to foreign investors, just hasn't worked. This idea of bringing in migrants for cheap labor to keep wages down is a real issue. So it's a big problem for Macron.
Under Macron's predecessor, François Hollande, the jobless rate increased 44 out of 46 months at one point. To change that, Hollande controversially started excluding part-time underemployed workers from the official count. Macron went one better and declared that just looking for work once in the past month no longer makes someone unemployed. Macron also began revealing jobless data only once every 3 months to avoid media discussion of the unpopular issue.
We have to really distinguish between what the official unemployment rate is and what the unofficial unemployment rate is. And if we take what the potential workforce is, it's much, much higher. And it's really amazing because the service sectors, like restaurants and bars and stores and stuff, can't find people to fill positions. And the reason is they don't pay enough.
For years, many French economists have said that the official unemployment rate is undercounted by a third, which would put the real unemployment rate at well over 20%. The Macron era had been one of constant economic unrest, but the coronavirus pause seems to have ended, with protests recently increasing in number and intensity. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
President of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, Mahdi al-Mashat, has sent a stern message to the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, slamming the world body's inaction regarding Saudi Arabia's bloody war on Yemen.
Unfortunately, Saudi money has weakened the role of the United Nations in Yemen and has changed the world body's political position. The United Nations' primary concern should be the humanitarian situation in Yemen, but it has failed to consider that.
In the message sent to Antonio Guterres on United Nations Day, Mashat called on the UN to stop manipulating the facts in Yemen for political ends. He said the world body has effectively covered up for Saudis during 7 years of war under blockade. He added that the UN failure to renew the mandate of the Human Rights Council's group of eminent experts is yet another proof of how Saudis are bribing their way through the world body.
It was not so much a message of congratulation as it was a message of blame for the UN's negative role regarding what the Yemeni people have been subjected to over the past 7 years. It's a clear message that the UN must play its role and that the international community has failed morally in Yemen. We are ready to support the continued work of the United Nations and its humanitarian organizations and facilitate their operations inside Yemen, but on the condition that the United Nations protect the Yemeni people and stops Saudi violations.
Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war on Yemen on March 2015. The war has killed tens of thousands of people, including women and the children, and has pushed the country to the brink of famine.
Yemenis say the United Nations continues to apply double standards when dealing with the ongoing Saudi crimes against millions of Yemenis. They believe that the Yemeni army's operations are legitimate as it is defending the sovereignty of Yemen, which is the only way forward to put an end to the humanitarian crisis in the country. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
Shame on you all.
They're small in number, but they have big voices resonating along the streets of Oldham, Manchester, calling for Israeli arms company Elbit Systems to be shut down. This is the Elbit site in Manchester, and the event here, organized by several pro-Palestinian groups who accuse Elbit of providing Israel with predatory drones and other military hardware, accusing it of complicity in Israeli war crimes and in abetting Israel in terrorizing the people of Gaza. Elbit Systems UK, a subsidiary of the Israel-based company of the same name, employs over 500 people and has 10 sites in the UK, including 4 factories.
Israel is an apartheid state. It's a racist state which is preventing Palestinians from living their ordinary everyday lives. And indeed worse, it's starving them, it's bombing them, it's killing them, it's depriving them of their lands and homes. And it has been since 1948. This factory here, Elbit, is the largest private Israeli arms factory. There's 10 outlets in the UK, and they are all making drones and weapons which go to kill Palestinians.
Apart from supplying Israel with weaponry, Elbit is also a major supplier of sophisticated technology to the British military.
That Britain and Israel have a clear, incestuous, revolving door type of relationship between each of their military establishments and their arms companies. We are fighting back against that here.
In August, pro-Palestine activists took their fight to another level. Direct action against the same site in Oldham, causing disruption to the firm's operations. For their actions, they often face intimidation, arrest, and possible prison time. But they say they're unfazed. Events such as the one today have led to increased public awareness about Elbit and its operations and growing calls for its closure. That, the activists say, is one important step towards a free Palestine.
The United Nations has warned that more than half of Afghanistan's 39 million population is facing acute food insecurity as hunger is rising and children are dying. "We can't feed people on promises," says the head of the World Food Program, David Beasley. He has urged world countries to step up life-saving assistance to resuscitate Afghanistan's economy.
"We have been left on the streets for 3 months now. We haven't received any aid despite calls on the United Nations. Most women and children are sick or starving. Why are they doing this to us? Aren't we human beings?"
"Nowadays, there are no jobs for us, but there is poverty, hunger, and disaster. We are a family of 10, and wondering what to do and how to feed them. Winter is closing in, and prices are rising. People will die if the government and other countries don't take any action."
Here, Afghan social activists have come together on behalf of millions of vulnerable people and families to protest the critical humanitarian situation in the country. They're calling on the U.S. to free Afghans' assets and compensate them for its war crimes in Afghanistan.
"We are chanting for our rights. The U.S. has always treated Afghans with cruelty. Our protest today has two aims. First, we are calling on the U.S. to free up our own money and let aid flow in. Second, the U.S. must compensate us for the war crimes it has committed and the damage it has caused."
The Taliban takeover weakened an already fragile economy that was heavily dependent on foreign aid. Western countries suspended aid, and the World Bank and International Monetary Fund also halted payments. Immediate global aid is now crucial to meet the most basic humanitarian needs of Afghans as winter approaches with no jobs, cash, or prospects for the people. Afghans and humanitarian bodies have warned of imminent disaster if proper action is not taken. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Iran is a land of ethnic diversity, and that is reflected in different languages, cultures, and of course, music. After over a one-year hiatus due to the coronavirus, the Iranian Folk Music Festival has once again hosted musicians from across Iran, each playing their local tunes using their indigenous instruments.
"I come from the northern Khorasan province. I am so happy to be part of this music festival, to share my city's music with my fellow Iranians from other cities. I've brought our local instruments, such as sonal, which is an ancient Iranian woodwind instrument, and dhol, which is a local type of drum.
We in Sistan and Baluchistan province play sitar, which we also call tambure. We also play qaychak, which is a type of bowed lute, similar to kamanche. We usually play in celebrations.
Every night during the three-day festival, different local ensembles took to the stage to perform, so the audience could listen to Kurdish, Baluchi, Azeri, and Arabic tunes in a matter of a few hours. And this is my favorite part. On the sidelines of the festival, bands from different ethnicities get together and improvise. This is where music transcends languages and interconnects various cultures.
Music is a language that needs no translation. We may not understand each other's languages, but as you could see, different people are interacting peacefully through music.
It's so interesting to see artists from different parts of the country perform together. This is the true meaning of national unity that binds us despite our cultural differences.
And organizers say that's the main purpose of holding such an event, to unite different ethnicities through the language of music.
Music is an integral part of society's identity and history, and Iran is no exception. So the festival tries to both introduce the local music of different ethnic groups in Iran while establishing peace and friendship among them.
Organizers also hope that the festival would help revive Iran's folk music, which has long been overshadowed by some of the heavily invested genres, like pop.
Through music, it's easier to grasp the ethnic diversity in Iran, because music itself is a language, a universal language that speaks the beauty of differences and peaceful coexistence of different cultures as one nation. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Kerman.
The sanctions by the United Nations Security Council against North Korea over its nuclear and missile programs have been in place for more than a decade. The UN now acknowledges that the U.S.-backed sanctions were at least partly responsible for North Korea's food and medicine shortages.
DPR Korea has never been more isolated from the international community than at this point in time. This is having a dramatic impact on the human rights of the people inside of the country and dampens hopes of achieving sustainable peace and security on the Korean Peninsula.
The special rapporteur was echoing and backed the call by some member states for sanctions relief for North Korea.
There must be a move back towards the spirit of multilateral cooperation that enabled the foundation of the United Nations in the first place.
This weekend, the South Korean and U.S. envoys on North Korea met in Seoul, with South Korea calling for an official declaration to end the 1950-53 Korean War, and the U.S. agreeing to discuss the proposal later. The U.S. has often repeated that it's willing to meet with North Korea anywhere, anytime, without preconditions. U.S. officials have now added that the country holds no hostile intent toward North Korea, while at the same time pressing for stronger implementation of the controversial United Nations Security Council sanctions. South Koreans expressed their hope the international community could at least provide humanitarian aid.
The United Nations need to support North Koreans so that they don't continue to suffer from starvation.
South Korean President Moon Jae-in has sought to build peace with North Korea, arranging summits and proposing other avenues of engagement, while the U.S. maintained a hard line. President Moon will leave office next spring. Frank Smith, Seoul.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight. According to one recent international survey, about 10% of those with COVID-related smell loss experienced parosmia in the immediate aftermath of the disease. And this rose to 47% when the respondents were interviewed again 6 or 7 months later. We now present you an article written by Linda Giddies. The piece is titled Fresh Air or Foul Odor? How COVID Can Distort the Sense of Smell. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Most people are aware that a cardinal symptom of COVID-19 is loss of smell, or anosmia. It may last for weeks or even months. Increasingly, though, those who have recovered subsequently develop another disorienting symptom, parosmia, or a distorted sense of smell. This typically results in things that once smelled pleasant smelling bad or rotten. COVID-19 isn't the only cause. Head injuries and other types of infection can also trigger it. But SARS-CoV-2 appears particularly adept at setting off this sensory confusion. According to one recent international survey, about 10% of those with COVID-related smell loss experience parosmia in the immediate aftermath of the disease. And this rose to 47% when the respondents were interviewed again 6 or 7 months later. The researchers calculated, based on current infection estimates, there could be as many as 7 million people worldwide with parosmia as a result of COVID-19. Dr. Dweka Burgess Watson of Newcastle University, who has been studying the psychological impact of parosmia, says this is on a scale that we've never seen before. Nor is it just a problem of the nose. Dr. Burgess Watson says it can have a profound impact on your quality of life, from how you eat to how you socialize or engage with significant others, down to the level of whether you actually feel safe going out of your house or not. Leslie Matthews, a 52-year-old from Bolton, lost her sense of smell after catching COVID-19 in January. It started coming back in August, but most toiletries and foodstuffs smell alien to her. She says, "I have two main distorted smells. The first is a chemical type smell, which is present in most toiletries and carbonated drinks. All fragrance and aftershaves have the same disgusting smell, which makes even passing people when shopping intolerable." She notes, "The second is what I can only liken to the awful smell of a rotten fruit. All meats, cooked or otherwise, smell of this. Again, along with anything toasting, roasting or fried." Because so many foods trigger her parosmia, Leslie Matthews' diet is currently restricted to a handful of safe foods, including porridge, scrambled eggs, poached salmon, grapes and sultanas. And she feels nauseous within seconds of someone switching on a toaster. She says, "I can't go into a coffee shop and I'm constantly making excuses not to socialize, as it is no longer a pleasant experience." Restricted eating and weight loss is common among those with parosmia, Watson says. Other people start overeating because their altered sense of smell leaves them feeling unsatisfied after meals. Also common is an altered perception of body odor, both one's own and other people's. Watson says, "That can lead to a loss of social intimacy, either because you're too scared to be in the company of others or you find the company of others triggers your parosmia," adding, "I have seen cases of people feeling that they had to leave their friends because they couldn't stand the smell of them. How do you tell the person you love that you find the smell of them disgusting?" One of the worst cases she recently encountered was a person whose parosmia was triggered by the smell of fresh air. Dr. Dweka Burgess Watson says, "They literally couldn't even move from room to room in their own house. If they walked outside, they felt the disgusting smell of the air permeated everything." The good news is that scientists are beginning to unpick the molecular mechanisms of parosmia, which could eventually lead to better ways of treating it. On the roof of the nasal cavity, about 7 centimeters behind the nostrils, is a thin membrane studded with specialized cells called olfactory sensory neurons, which capture odor molecules from the air we breathe in and out and send electrical signals to the brain area that processes them. Infections such as COVID-19 can damage these neurons. The current leading theory is that they regenerate. Miswiring and disordered signaling can occur, resulting in parosmia. Chrissy Kelly, founder of the smell loss charity Absent, who has suffered from parosmia since developing a sinus infection in 2012, says, "If there is anything amiss with the whole chain of command among the olfactory nerves, then the brain cannot receive a complete signal." She adds, "That's when you get these people reporting strange smells that they can't really describe, that are difficult to pin down. Triggers vary from person to person, but many of the same substances often crop up. Coffee, meat, onion, garlic, eggs, chocolate, shower gel, and toothpaste. Separate research by Dr. Jane Parker of the University of Reading and colleagues is beginning to shed light on why these substances are so problematic. In recent experiments, they broke the aroma of coffee down into its constituent molecular parts and ran them under the noses of people with parosmia and unaffected volunteers. This showed that parosmia is not linked to a person's ability to smell. Rather, there are certain compounds that evoke feelings of disgust in many people with parosmia, but which unaffected people tend to describe as pleasant. Many contain sulfur or nitrogen, although not all such compounds are triggers. They also tend to be detectable by the human nose at very low concentrations. The most frequently reported trigger in coffee was 2-furanmethaninethiol, which unaffected participants described as roasty, popcorn, or smoky smelling. Parker says many people with parosmia describe it as just new coffee. That's how my coffee smells now, adding, others described it as awful, disgusting. They've never smelled anything like it before. The fact that there's a common set of triggers suggests people are not imagining the unpleasantness that they're experiencing. It also supports the miswiring hypothesis, although if this is occurring, it seems not to be happening at random. Further research may determine why these triggers elicit such a strong parosmic response and possibly inform future treatment. For now, Dr. Watson recommends that anyone suffering from parosmia write a list of all their triggers and stick it somewhere that other household members can see it, so they can help them avoid these substances or find alternatives. For instance, many of the compounds that Parker and her colleagues have identified are created during the chemical reaction that gives roasted, fried, or toasted food its distinctive flavor. Different cooking techniques might render the same foods less offensive. Another unanswered question is how long those recovering from COVID-19 can expect their parosmia to persist. Dr. Parker says the people that had it pre-COVID were taking anything from 6 months to 2 or 3 years to recover, so it's a long process. Kelly says for some individuals, certain objects may never smell precisely how they remember them, but that doesn't mean their quality of life won't dramatically improve. She says, you have to look for healing and for a quality of life that makes you feel good about your day-to-day experiences. She adds, that's got to be the yardstick for recovery.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran, all big and small.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio I'm your host Musa Al-Bahalili and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing In this program we discuss issues, questions and other relevant circumstances or topics parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children As usual, all of the answers are based upon the Holy Quran and the narrations of the household of the Prophet and, of course, of the Prophet himself. Peace be upon them all. Joining us in our studio is our guest speaker and dear friend, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musul, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Our topic today is about how we should go on, how we should go about understanding our children. And we spoke about how important it is to recognize their talents and how to cultivate their talents and their hobbies, and also how important the environment is for the child, and how we should, first of all, before even having children, consider the environment that we will be bringing our children onto, as that environment will have a very big effect on the development of the child. Dear Sayyid, please enlighten us further.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajuh. Among the things that we need to pay attention to when it comes to understanding our children, we need to understand their problems. Now, it's not logical that as a father or a mother or an educator that I deal with a child, yet I don't understand his problems.
Right.
For example, sometimes you have children who have one parent. Like, you know, as a result of a divorce, for example, that child would have different problems than a child with two parents. A child, for example, who is, who is slow in understanding and learning is different than another child. A child who is, for example, disabled, he would have different problems than another child.
Right.
And you can see that children themselves, they are not the same, and their requirements are not the same, and each child has a problem of his own.
Right.
That we need to sit down as parents and figure out what are the problems of our children, or at least even as a step before, we need to say what problems that could face our children that
right.
we need to avoid, or at least we need to be prepared for. Because most of the times, me as a father, I can see and I know about the problems that other children face, but, and I know it could happen to my child, but I wait for it to happen to my child, then I deal with it.
Right. It's not
and
a proactive effort.
Yeah,
it's
that's
and reactive.
Exactly.
Effort.
And if I'm ready for it. So we need to say no. We need to understand, we need to come to the child and deal with his problems and learn about his problems way before.
Right.
We need to understand what kind of issues that might face a child, what kind of problems that he might get himself into, what kind of emotional problems that he might be facing, when, especially when it comes to his, for example, to his studies, when it comes to him dealing with other people, when it comes to him, communicating with people. So there's a lot of problems that arise that as a parent I need to be aware of.
They said on that note, we will go on a quick break.
I am a Muslim, Islam my deen, Allah my Lord, His word Quran, Muhammad Prophet, peace be upon him. I am a Muslim for all of time. Someday, somehow, my journey here will end. I know not when. Life I live, oh what a blessed thing. As death comes to me, these words I will sing.
Welcome back, you listeners of IRRB English Radio. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing how important it is to help our children when they are going through all the various circumstances and problems of life, and how we should, as a parent, be proactive and not simply reactive.
Mm. So we, from this point, we get to say that sometimes when it comes to us as parents or educators, that we get into a collision course with children, and even whether they're children or teenagers, we have this collision and we have this misunderstanding, and sometimes it leads to a fight, sometimes it leads to children leaving their homes, it leads to a lot of things. It's only because the child is suffering from something that the parents are not aware of.
Right.
Especially when it comes to, for example, mental problems. Now, a lot of people don't take that mental issues seriously. Now, it's just amazing now we have so much terms for children like DDHD, CDD, right. I don't know. Like, the list just goes on of mental problems that kids have these days.
So many disorders.
So many disorders, like you said, that even, you know, just long names that children are facing these days. And most of the parents are either oblivious to that fact, or they just say, well, no, I don't think my child has it.
Right, it's not going to happen to my child.
It's not going to happen to my child. Right. And then when they realize that the child himself, he actually has it, the parent doesn't know how to deal with it.
They panic.
And not they just overcorrect. Panic, they have this collision. Then they, you know, they clash with one another because the child feels that he's not understood. He feels that his problems are not being at least accepted by his parents. So it would make him do something completely different. It would make the child do and act on his own accord. And you know how destructive that is because he's a child at the end of the day. He doesn't know, he cannot differentiate between right and wrong and good and evil, at least to this stage. So he would go towards, you know, anything that could get him out of his environment, out of his, you know, the problem that he's suffering, the problem that he's going through. So we go back to the parents and we say, well, you need to understand that children have problems as much as you do. Maybe their problems are different in nature. Maybe their problems are different in when it comes in strength. But nevertheless, they have a problem.
Right.
Sometimes even a small problem to a child, it's a big thing. For example, when a child goes to school and he gets into an argument with a teacher, for example, or he gets bullied at school, or one of his friends do something wrong to him.
Right.
So that leaves a mark and a stain on his soul, on his mentality.
Right.
And now when he comes home, he needs to find a parent that is very understanding, that is willing to work with him.
Sympathetic, at least.
Exactly. Well, to say the least, to be sympathetic about this the case that he's going through. So if he does not find that in the house, it just bottles up inside the child.
Right.
And then, obviously, these are the things that cause children to have all these disorders.
Right.
Because,
and
you
outbursts.
Know, yeah. So they bring it from somewhere. They don't find an understanding parent in the house. And then things happen. Things go
bad on. Things most of the time.
Exactly. So we need to say, no, let's sit with our children and decide their problems.
Right. They say we will go on a quick break.
Imam As-Sajjad alayhi salam said, a child's right is to be kind to him when educating him, forgiving him, covering his mistakes, acting moderately towards him, and helping him.
Welcome back to your listeners of IRRB English Radio. You are now listening into the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are speaking about how important it is for a child's problems to be understood by their parents and how we should react to them. At the very least, how we should anticipate them so that we may help our children go through this difficult phase of their lives. They say, please enlighten us further.
Now, once we understand that children have problems and they need to be understood, they need to be studied, they need to be worked with, we have to be, in a way or another, not just parents. We have to be like, I don't know, physicians, doctors. We need to deal with them in a way where, because as parents, sometimes we can't differentiate between me being a parent in a position of power and me trying to help a child. So when you go to a doctor, for example, you could have done the most stupid thing in the world, right? You could have eaten the worst thing. You could have harmed yourself. But when you go to the doctor's job is not there to sit and make fun of you or judge you or, I don't know, throw names at you. His job is to try to cure you and fix you to the best of his ability. His job is there to help, right? He passes no judgments, right? So you go to him and you got your hand stuck in a jar. His job is just to make sure he gets your hand out, right? He's not going to make fun of you for putting your hand in the jar in the first place. So he acts with you based on the fact that he needs to help, right? First and foremost.
That's the basic understanding of your guys' relationship with each other.
Exactly. So when it comes to parents and children, we understand now they have problems. They will go through problems whether sooner or later. Now, how do I deal with them? Because sometimes when parents find their kids have problems and they find themselves not being able to deal with the problem, they point finger at the child.
Right.
They start to blame the child for things, or they're trying to defame the child, or even, I don't know, sometimes it could even lead to hitting a child for making a problem or getting himself in a mess or having an issue of his own. So we're saying, well, that's not the right approach. As a parent, you need to be more understanding. You need to be more calm, more relaxed, more, I don't know, for the child to be able to trust you with their problems, no matter what they are. Unless you want to say, no, I am done, because sometimes we have this mentality, especially back in the day, when a child, especially teenagers, when they do something wrong, the parents say, you're not my child, I disown you.
Yeah, I disown you and cut all the relations.
Exactly. They used to do that back in the day.
Right.
But we can't do that anymore. You know, we're not in
this. Well, we shouldn't have done that in the first place, but.
Exactly. But I mean, if logically speaking, that shouldn't happen in the first place. So we should come to the child and accept him for what he is, accept the fact that he has a problem, and we have to deal with it based on the fact that we deal with him based on compassion, love, and mercy, and all these things that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given me. So instead of me giving them to strangers, first and foremost, I need to give them to my child. And sometimes as parents, we also, when we find out the child made a mistake and has a problem and we work it with them, sometimes we even use it against them.
That's what I want to say.
We keep reminding
him. Right. Or even another thing that I've seen parents do is when their child has a problem, like they're bad at reading perhaps, or some other problem that they have, they take that problem so personally and they're so offended by it. Like they equate the problem to the child and not the problem as just being something the child also is facing.
Exactly.
And they absolutely go berserk on the child. And the child is just standing there like, what have I done?
Exactly, exactly. So that's what we're saying. So that's an issue. So as parents, you need to understand that this is not a right way of dealing with a problem.
Right.
So instead of making a child feel guilty, instead of blaming things on the child and pointing fingers at the child, or even reminding him of his mistakes and reminding him of the problem that he has, you need to be more understanding, more loving, more caring, so the child feels safe in your presence and in your environment.
Right. Dear Sayyid, I thank you for your time today and for your insightful knowledge. And I also thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. If our dear listeners have any questions, comments, or some feedback that they want to give us, they can find us at our website, parstoday.com, or they can write us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. Alternatively, they can also find us on our various social media accounts under the call sign of Call of Islam Radio. Dear listeners, thank you for tuning in yet again.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.